Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
Oh yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nickelback, mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Ben Gracewood, Dylan Reeve.
And I have no idea if you're going to introduce me as a guest or whether I have to introduce myself. God damn it.
All right, also on the show is from Hollywood.
I got confused with the opening because I read Ben's name in the show document and it threw me off.
I just want to point out to the listeners, his name is not even in the show document.
It is too.
Nope.
I think you're mistaken.
On with the show.
So, the most exciting thing that's coming up is something I don't want to have happen, and that is, I can see you typing that right now, Breaking Bad's about to come back.
Oh, God.
You don't want it to start.
I don't want it to start because there's only like 6 more episodes or something. I don't want it to start because pretty soon after it starts, it'll finish.
If you put it off forever.
Like next week?
Being in the future.
Let's see.
Next week in America.
Yeah. But, you know, someone's auntie will probably sort them out, I bet.
Hopefully. Any bets in on bettingbad.com?
No.
Oh, come on.
Tell me about Betting Bad.
Bettingbad.com. Hit it now. You have 5 days left to place your bets. And there are segments like, you know, who's going to be alive, who's going to be dead, major plot points. You have easy bets like, you know, someone will die in the last episode. It's 100 points. And risky bets are, you know, Jesse will kill Walt in episode N, or, you know, Walt's cancer will return, that sort of stuff.
Oh, so, Walt's cancer is definitely going to return because it's cancer. That's what it does.
That's where I'm at. He's going to, that's the closing scene. He's going to be dying of cancer with no one to love him. That's
spoilers, motherfuckers.
That's my call.
It's not spoilers if it's conjecture.
No, I mean, but, you know, I haven't seen any of the show at all, not a single episode.
Then do you care even slightly?
Well, maybe because it's
cancer in episode one, for folks.
It exists. It exists. In this realm of shows I'm going to start watching at some point.
Like The Wire?
Yeah, I was going to say, like The Wire.
Spoilers, Vic Mackey is a bad guy on The Shield.
My example.
Sort of a bad guy. The Wire, I'm saving season 4.
House of Cards.
I still haven't watched it.
Really?
Yep.
That's good. That's very good.
I'm just holding on to it. It's just
Have
it's there.
Have you seen the new newsroom yet, Morgan?
No.
It got me a little bit in the feels, as they say.
Oh,
is that today's one?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. No.
It's going a bit deep.
That's 4.
Maybe just me. Maybe I'm soft.
Well, you're definitely soft. We already know that for damn sure. That's a fact. So epguides.com says that Blood Money, which is season 5, episode 9, is on 11 August.
Ooh, excite balls. That's like under a week.
Yep. So from the time that this show is released, it's about 3 days. It's Sunday, American time.
Definitely hit up Betting Bad. I reckon we should have a discourse Betting Bad pool.
Oh, I'm not good at doing predictions.
It's good though. You know, what I found is like you can take like a couple of easy bets that are obvious and then go on a risky hard bet, you know, and get 800 points.
And this is why you're not allowed to attend conferences in Vegas anymore. Oh, red 17
loose ends. Declan, don't remember Declan.
Do you know what else is, if we're talking about vaguely, no, it's not, it's a bit tangential, vaguely video related things. It is Geek Week on YouTube.
So this is like the much less interesting version of Comedy Week.
Probably. There's a couple of I haven't seen a lot of Geek Week stuff, but the Nerdist has a few, and the one that caught my attention today was WWE wrestler, what the hell's his name, CM Bad, correcting people on grammar.
Yeah.
As grammar rant videos on YouTube go, and it turns out there is quite a few of them. These are pretty excellent. It's, I think, 4 or 5.
Mm.
So, you know, Keep them stored away. Keep the URL stored away for when you want to rant at people about their inability to distinguish between there, and there, or your and your.
How about there? No love for there?
There. No, not a lot of love for there.
It doesn't feel like we're doing the show. This is very strange having been here.
I'm not doing anything. Don't blame me.
I'm not blaming you. I don't know. Maybe no, it just feels too comfortable. You know, it's easy. You've hardly nose whistled at all, though. So you're letting it slip. So are we going to turn it into a tech podcast this week or what?
Oh, what is there anything interesting in tech?
Mojo X.
Ooh.
Oh, what about the how's that Ubuntu phone going? A friend of mine actually pledged for it, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to have to pay.
What's this, Mark Shuttleworth in a Reddit AMA said he would make up the difference. The Ubuntu guy said they're still going to build them even if they don't make 32 million.
No, they didn't.
He did. He said it on the Reddit. Is it Indiegogo?
No, he didn't. No, it's a full funding campaign. That it's not a flexi funding.
Yes.
If they don't make the 32 million, they don't get any money.
So what if he just...
I'm sure. I'm just, excuse my typing.
Wow, they've made $8.2 million.
Which is a phenomenally large amount, but is only about a third of what they're aiming to raise. No, not even a third, is it? No, it is a third? I can't do it. Maths, how does it work? Not even a third.
So how much do you need to make a phone?
Well, they say 32 million.
But that doesn't seem right. I mean, how much do you need? Not how much do you want?
Well, no, they reckon that's about as thin and whatever as they can get it.
But I could probably make a phone for about $200.
I think maybe your design target is a little bit different to theirs.
It'd be like, you know, some one of those little Arduino things. And it would and it would not be great, but I'm telling you, it would function as a phone and it would have a touch screen. Actually, maybe for a touch screen it'd have to be $300.
Yeah,
Okay, so what I'm saying is, for $300, I can make, you know,
well, what you should
one unit of
an Indiegogo, and you could get your $300. In fact, if you just set it at $300, you could probably get a bit more than $300.
I mean, in theory, I guess. Yeah, I guess. Depends on what the reward levels are, doesn't it? I suppose. But so what I'm saying is, you can make a phone for very little money. So why do they need $32 million? Is it for regulatory stuff, or what is it?
No, I think. Well, I'm sure part of it. There is the AMA on Reddit with Mark Shuttleworth, where he does outline some of the reasons that they've come up with that number. But basically, that's the amount that they have decided they need to execute the phone they want to execute. If they can't raise the money, they've decided it's not worth spending less than that to make a lesser phone.
I've got a phone that I want to execute.
I know, a Nexus 4 that you don't love.
I don't love it. I love it. I want to love it. I want to love it badly. But it's this thing with its radio. I just want to throw it on the ground. But then what will they take my rainbow photos with?
I retract my comment.
I know, because you're wrong.
Yeah. I'm sure I read a headline that said that.
I read a headline that said he was going to top it up as well.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a point at which he will, but he was pretty certain that they were... Because part of the reason they want to fund it that way is they want to know there's a demand for it before they build it, essentially. Mm. Rather than trying to raise capital another way and then finding out that no one actually wants the phone or something.
I think they should just commit.
Well, it's a funny gamble they're taking.
Oh, the Mashable article says that he won't use his own funds to make up the difference, but I'm sure the other day something said that he
I'm
would.
I'm fairly sure what he said in the AMA when I read it, but, you know, whatever. I can't be bothered Googling it.
Perhaps it was like a TechCrunch story, and so naturally they got some facts incorrect.
What about Windows Phone? Is that awesome?
Yeah, I love it. It's great.
Are you still contractually obligated to say that it's awesome?
I've never been contractually obligated to say that it's awesome. But have you seen the 1020? That's pretty. It's finally the Windows Phone with the proper PureView in it. That's great.
So it's like that. What was that?
You
the 800?
The
808?
The camera's not fixing things.
Not fixing.
I don't know.
The camera isn't the problem people have with Windows Phone. As Dylan just said,
I don't know if people have problems with Windows Phone. 10% share.
No, Windows has problem with Microsoft has a problem with Windows Phone.
I mean, I'm an apologist, absolutely, but I'm interested in terms of when it becomes not a problem. To, you know, when they have 10% market share and in the UK and, you know, high single digits in the rest of Europe. They've got a problem in the USA, but it's kind of at what point do you say it's no longer a competitor when it's blowing, you know, BlackBerry out of the water? And
wait, so are you saying Windows Phone is big in Germany? Is that?
It's big in Europe.
Yeah.
How's it going in India? Because that was one of Nokia's strongholds for a long time.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the numbers.
Well, there's your canary in the smartphone.
How long till Nokia release an Android phone?
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Why not hedge your bets?
I have their valid. I mean, I think there's a valid point of, trying to differentiate. You know, I think that has got them some traction.
Well, could they not have differentiated? I mean, they're already differentiating with their hardware. And people look at their hardware and go, "That's amazing," but it's running an operating system we don't want.
Yeah, like Windows 8.
Windows 8.1 is coming out. It fixes some things, apparently.
5.4%
market share in India, quarter 4, 2012.
5.4%?
6% in India in quarter 1, 2013.
That's 8%. A lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, I don't know how many of them have. This is a smartphone market share. I don't know what the market for smartphones is in India.
Yeah.
No, just phones. It's, really? It varies from, 4 to 8%. Some people are saying the ad duplex stuff is saying they're big, but that's browser, and that would make sense because it's probably not a lot of smartphones.
So anyway, the Motorola released the Moto X, which is a customizable sort of, it's a middle of the road phone in terms of specs, but it's got a bunch of new sensors. It's got always on microphone stuff, so you can give it audio voice commands.
I thought people freak out about that shit.
I actually don't like the idea very much, but then I read a review on The Verge where Chappy McChap, whatever the hell the guy's name was talking about using it in the car and not having to push a button to prime it to start listening or anything like that.
But there's already car phone apps that have that.
No, but I like the way that you have to prime it with your voice as well, so that it doesn't just respond to anyone saying.
Okay. Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But what about the secret back door that the NSA has embedded in it to record your conversations constantly, or that they can just somehow malware it and log in and record phone calls anywhere or record conversations anywhere they want to?
You can do that with any Android phone, so it's not just
you can do that with cars. Did you know that?
That's awesome. Eh?
This is a proof of concept that's been demonstrated. You can hack into a car's internal system.
It's been embargoed, hasn't it, in the UK? Because Volvo's had an embargo against it.
But you can hack into it. You can hack into a car's internal system and engage the built-in Bluetooth system to record and transmit the conversations in the car.
Awesome.
And then you can hack into the person's phone when they go home pooing themselves from the terrifying time they just had in the car.
The computerizing of cars is terrifying when you start to look into the attack vectors and things. And
the computerizing of everything is terrifying.
But everything in cars is connected.
It's the root of everything that's going on right now is the fact that everything has been computerized. There is
the car stereo is connected to the auto parking system, which drives the steering. The car stereo is
naturally, of course, it is.
It's conspiracies. Go back to the Motorola X. I love the partially on OLED screen. It's great.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Well, that's something clever about the OLED, right? You can turn on just one bit, not another. Yeah.
So notifications and unlock and stuff, Dylan, just stay on the phone the whole time because it just drains less than as much as a white LED.
Yeah.
Is this a phone that can actually last a whole day? Because that would be pretty impressive.
No, good. I don't know, but you can get a wooden back for it.
Yeah, I'm excited about the wooden backs.
Oh, yeah. Fucking hipster phone.
Well,
I
maybe.
Mixed usage order. Up to 24 hours, it says. Bullshit.
You can order one of 250 variants. How much longer that adds to the shipping time if you just get instead of getting a black one.
I'd be so tempted to get a Bruce Lee black and yellow one, though, and then I'd be like, why didn't I get the wood? This is just goofy, but I also like it.
So you could get like everything, the buttons and stuff, but I presume you could just buy backs.
How long did it take? Oh, is it actually a removable case? Can you change the battery? Because that'd be nice again. No phones have changeable batteries anymore. Fuck it.
Galaxy S4.
Can you? Yeah, exactly. The Galaxy series. Something. Can you something?
Oh. Yes, you definitely can. And the camera that was promised to be really good, and on the internet the night before the big reveal, I was like, the only deal breaker for me is a shreddy camera. And I was told not to be silly because, there were lots of rumors about what's it called, Clear View or Clear Pixel or something.
Clear Pixel, apparently.
And in the tests on The Verge, it takes some good photos, but it's very unreliable about when it's going to take a good photo or a crappy photo. So
that's mostly true of cell phone cameras, though. Mostly.
Well, if you take all of them as a whole, 15. Yes. But then if you take the outstanding examples, you know, the flagship phones, I would say that they were as good as a low-end point-and-shoot. And so, a low-end point-and-shoot is, you know, fairly reliable.
Yeah. Is this the first phone that Motorola's released since Google bought them?
No.
It isn't?
No, but it's the first one that kind of, I think, might be influenced by them. Because the others would have been well under development.
Yeah.
Okay. So why isn't it Android 4.3?
Don't start with Android. Have you seen, the Android fragmentation visualizations?
It's
really great.
What did it look like? Did it look like a smashed lasagna?
Every one of those I've seen, though, fragments Android much more than OS, iOS.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't.
Like they break it down to smaller versions.
No. This one is pretty reasonable on that. Especially when you look at the screen size fragmentation. Here we go.
Right. One of those. Who cares?
I'll drop it in the chat room.
No one cares. I don't care.
Yeah, screen size fragmentation is crazy. But you know what else takes a bad photo?
What? Potatoes?
Yeah, this is true.
Oh, he's segueing. Look at that. Just like a professional. This is why we don't have him on the show.
Makes us look bad, especially me.
Yeah, he tries to stick with some sort of, you know, order and normality.
What else takes a bad photo? You know, you'd think a photocopier would take a good photocopy. Would copy photos?
I would expect the blacks and whites to be really good.
Yeah, exactly.
And the colours maybe not so good.
Of documents. Turns out some of the latest, the Xerox WorkCenter 7535, just happens to transpose areas. So the example they show, it has a floor plan with quite small writing saying, you know, this is 21.11 meters, square meters. And on the photocopy, it just changes it to 14.13.
What? And
yeah.
So
the guy who discovered this did a test, right? He thought, well, I will test this somehow with magical skills. And he created a page just with a string of small numbers on it, basically just, you know, low fonts, low point size. Just a big long strings of numbers. And there were a few things like at one point 65.40 becomes 85.40.
That seems like a really dangerous thing when it's a blueprint.
The number 66 becomes 86.
Yeah, and it's not, you look at it and you think, oh, that's just it could be an off pixel, but it's not. It's actually an 8 that's been overwritten where the 6 was.
And yeah, I mean, you look at the 6 and you look at the 8 and you say they're different.
Yep.
Oh, and so it's doing some OCR and then it's laying over a new version of the digit so it looks like it's done a really clean scan, sort of faking a higher resolution on its sensor.
Nope.
No, it's the, he said it's the compression, the JBIG2 compression, which basically says, I see a bunch of things on this document that look the same as each other, and they're near enough to be the same. I'm just going to call them the same.
Right.
What it does is it turns the document into symbols, and where it sees the same symbols, it just repeats them. So then it builds a dictionary of symbols and then represents the document using that dictionary. It's designed for high-efficiency compression of text, basically.
So the page is in the show notes, and you really should look because there's a before and after example. And it is quite incredible. I mean, it is very clear. It's not just smudgy. It's very clearly changed.
Now, in theory, it's not just Xerox machines that are going to do this. There are other systems that also use the same compression algorithm, and it's been supported as a compression algorithm in PDF since 1.4, which is a long time ago. So lots of, you know, software PDF libraries could do it as well, all sorts of things. Crazy. Who knows?
That's could terrible.
Pop up anywhere.
That's absolutely terrible. Do you know a funny story? It's not technology.
No, it's fine.
So there's a
comedy podcast now.
Yes, it's a comedy podcast. There's a dialysis patient called Akarangi Masters Cooper who she was having trouble with the dialysis patients get taken by taxi to their treatment. And the taxi wasn't working out for her. And so she decided that she was going to refuse dialysis until the taxi situation was sorted out. Like yesterday, she made that decision. And as of today, she's back on dialysis because, strangely enough, she started to get really sick. It's like if you had a hunger strike and then, like, your first dinner time, you're like, I'm feeling a bit peckish. How about BK? Anyway, this sort of protest is insane.
Well, I mean, how is it worse than a hunger strike?
Well, with a hunger strike, you're going to last, you know, probably 30 days. You know, if you have water and a little bit of salt, you know, you'll probably last 30 days, maybe 20, but you definitely won't be dead inside a week. You know, and also hunger strikes don't tend to be because, you know, there were some transport issues and getting to your free medical treatment. They're usually because you've been locked up without charge for years on end or something along those lines lately.
Yeah, or not allowed into a country, yeah. Sort of stuff.
I don't think people should be allowed in countries.
Next story.
I've pushed a button. No, apparently no one liked my story. I find that one really amusing.
I just stopped listening and I couldn't get back into it. I'm not sure what happened. I zoned out momentarily, then it was all over.
I don't know the name of the chap, but there was a man trying to get his pet turtle into... he was on a China Southern Airways flight, but where was he flying to? Was it into China? May have been into China. So he was trying to smuggle his pet turtle in. How do you think he disguised it?
He disguised it as a Ninja Turtle. He gave it nunchucks and put an orange thing around its eyes. Nunchucks because it would be Michelangelo with the orange.
He disguised it as a hamburger and put it in a bun.
Did he paint it brown?
Is that really the important part?
Or if you painted the underside of it brown and then left the top bit green, maybe it would look like a hamburger patty with lettuce on it.
Or just absolutely smother it with mustard and sauce.
What if you accidentally ate it? You got hungry, you know, you had a little sleep on the plane, you woke up, you're like hungry and you're like, oh shit, a hamburger, I didn't remember bringing that on. Oh, nom nom nom.
My hunger strike has gone wrong.
Which is the sound of eating a turtle. Wait, was it a turtle or a tortoise?
It was a turtle, according to the story.
Pet tortoises?
I think pet tortoises are probably more common, if anything. But Americans seem to call everything a turtle.
So, Anthony, potential New York City mayoral candidate Anthony Dick Picks.
Yeah. We know.
Yeah. Wants to... This is interesting. He wants to have... It's interesting, I'm telling you. Yeah. So you need to listen.
You mean Carlos Danger.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He wants to have all New York City cops wearing cameras.
That's a great idea. Yeah, it's a great idea.
It is. It is an interesting idea. Apparently there was a similar program trialed in Rialto, California, wherever the shit is.
Lobbied by Taser because they want to sell the cameras. But yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, Taser.
Did Taser make the cameras?
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You think there'd be another other. Anyway, whatever. In Rialto, California, where they've trialed this, the number of complaints against police officers dropped by 88%, and the use of force by officers dropped 60%.
Yeah.
So, yeah, interesting. I don't know if he'll be mayor anymore now that the whole cockpix thing keeps coming out.
Very slim chance, right?
Well, he was the leading contender for a while. I don't know if this is.
I was kind of sad that you know he dropped in the polls after that because I think you know in the future everyone who's a mayoral candidate will have had cockpicks on the internet in their past. I'm sure.
Why?
I have.
I haven't, but the kids these days do.
Show some pride, Ben.
Do you know there are apps you can get on Android that I assume there might be on other operating systems as well. On Android, there are apps you can get that automatically capture your Snapchat messages.
Right. So basically, cockpit archives.
It somehow detects when Snapchat comes to the foreground and does a screenshot.
So Ben, in your Snapchat, do you get sent a lot of penis photos?
I don't have Snapchat.
No, neither. Probably because I'm not 13 or whoever it is that uses Snapchat.
But, you know, you get my point, though, that I thought that Anthony Weiner winning New York would be a vote of, you know, hey, kids, don't stress so much because everyone's doing dick pics.
Yeah, and relax. It's just a penis and sort of harassment, you know, and you know, infidelity.
Between consenting people on the same, you know, honestly.
He's now at fourth in the polls anyway.
Wasn't he down to fifth?
Like fourth most popular penis.
He's now fourth. Oh, no, that's in the polls for mayoral candidate. He's number second in the. He's number second. He's coming second in the penis picks poll.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And the most popular
maybe
mayoral
penis. Maybe they should just do, like, you know, you have anonymous genitalia votes for mayor.
Yeah. I have a feeling that he'd win because, you know, judging by the pictures, things are going all right for Wiener.
Yeah. Wiener's Wiener.
Yeah. Wiener! I've got really good news, guys. Now, you know, a lot of the stories we've had, you know, environmental stuff and, you know, we've had wild weather and so on. But according to Futurity, the climate shift favours extreme wildfires. And it's very nice that it favours something, isn't it?
It's yeah, absolutely. It's all about the negativity, eh?
Yeah.
We need to reduce negativity and become positive.
I mean, fires look really cool from space, especially when they're large enough to see from there. You know, with the amazing smoke plumes, and they make for really great sunsets.
They make beautiful sunsets. Yeah.
And the that red retardant stuff out of the planes is awesome.
You can't say that, Ben. That's not politically correct.
The red handicaptant.
Yeah, that's better. The special tint.
I'm with you on the positivity, though. Like, this whole Fonterra thing, you know, I think people are being super negative about that.
Yeah.
They were just
People are saying it's they've lost trust in Fonterra, which is...
I don't
understand what more... Like, a thing happened, and Fonterra fronted up about it. They
15 months later, they fronted up about it. Yeah, they were completely open.
I haven't been paying that much attention.
I'm struggling with the 15 months later thing. I don't quite understand that. But, I mean... I think they could have spun it much better, and said, "Look, it's just Acidophilus."
We're making yogurt.
Exactly, organic Acidophilus yogurt. You
know, Acidophilism.
Yes, so I'm sure if it's actually botulism.
Yeah. I remember there was a scare about botulism in Western Springs Park. Because ducks were dying of it or something. And I had to, because I'd been playing down there, I had to like soak my cutty grass slashed hands in hot water with Dettol in it. It's not what you'd do now. Probably it did nothing. And maybe it was just a punishment for fucking around in the cutty grass and there was no botulism. But the story at the time was that it was about the botulism.
It stung like fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really hot.
Not that fuck stings.
What?
I don't know. There's an interesting thing, though. There's an interesting point. Is you don't know whether, like you know, this whole Caricare formula being recalled and a whole bunch of other weird things. You don't know where the hell that stuff goes. You don't know who, like, there's. I don't think before this anyone realised that Caricare formula was made with Fonterra milk powder.
No. Breast is best. Just quietly.
Yeah. But it's interesting because I went to the food show on the weekend and I don't know if you remember this, the whole sanitarium is the Seventh-day Adventists, and I don't particularly, for that reason, I've decided not to buy sanitarium products. And then it turns out, of course...
Weet-Bix.
I don't buy Weet-Bix. I buy Pam's Wheat Biscuits.
They're probably made in the same place.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, anything white label is made in the same place.
No, most of the white label cereals are made by Hubbard's under contract, actually, or at least at some point. And it doesn't.
Check yourself, I reckon.
Well, I know a lot of them were. Don't know about Weet-Bix.
So what you're saying is
the point is
you took a stand and you
no I went to the food show anyway.
You have no idea of the state of your stand.
Well, as much as possible. You went to the food show though, and of course Sanitarium has so many brands that it's, you know, they have Lisa's Hummus, they have
it's like bloody Kraft and
Naked Organics, is that one of theirs? Anyway, it turned out the what are those little deep fried chickpea balls called? My mind is blanked.
Falafels.
The falafel stuff we like. If you go to the food show on a Saturday, you can easily find out what Sanitarium owns because they're not there. Their stands are empty. With a sign saying, "We take Saturday off to rest and recharge."
Oh, jeez.
Chat room's laughing at you and your principles. So I would just point out that, you know, so Pam's might have some kind of Weet-Bix analog, but I bet they don't have Weet-Bix multigrain analog. And Weet-Bix multigrain is so good. It's 25 times better than normal Weet-Bix. It's delicious.
Oat bran
on it. Oh, it's yum. There's just something better with the crunch. Mm. It's got kind of more complexity and yum.
My issue isn't really with Sanitarium being owned by the Seventh-day Adventists. It's actually with the fact that we for some reason bestow tax-exempt status on the promotion of religious activity or the promotion of religious activities or something.
That doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't. I understand not having to pay tax on your charitable activities. That's fine. But the promotion of religion is not a charitable activity.
You know who doesn't pay nearly enough tax?
I'm going to find out.
Doctor Who.
Underwater strip clubs.
Oh, yeah, okay, go on then. Do your story.
You don't get Doctor Who.
No, I want to get into this underwater strip club thing.
All right, go on. Tell me about your underwater strip clubs that you value so much.
I was just amazed at am I trolling the internet for interesting stories? Apparently, off the coast of Israel is an underwater strip club.
So you admit you're a troll, then, do you, Ben?
An abandoned underwater strip club.
Yeah, well, abandoned is an interesting word. Like when you look at the photos, it looks vacant rather than abandoned. It's got dusty floors, but apart from that, it's pristine.
It's
quite incredible.
If it was abandoned, wouldn't it be flooded and so on? It must require a certain amount of maintenance to keep something like that working.
It's not. It's dry.
That's what I thought. I think it underwater is perhaps stretching it. I mean, it looks like it's built off the under a wharf or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not. This isn't like what is that? Mermaids. This isn't like a normal strip club with tanks built into it for strippers to swim in.
And the photos are from divers outside.
Yeah, this is an strip club, a strip club built in the ocean of some sort, must be the ocean.
It's amazing because there's lots of those photos of abandoned
coral and rock formations and things
growing on it.
What I don't understand about this is why would an underwater strip club ever be abandoned? How can that not be a million-dollar business?
Or even, I'd just love to open it up as a restaurant or cafe. It looks fantastic.
Apparently it was something like that before it was a strip club.
Okay.
I think.
How many servers could you fit in there?
Before it reopened as a strip club.
Stuff it full of servers. Use the sea as cooling. Away you go.
The entrance to the strip joint is above the water. People just crossed a 230-foot bridge and went down a flight of stairs.
There you go.
230-foot? That's quite a long bridge.
Not really.
Still a bit.
Whoops. Autoplay.
Autoplay.
So
what was your story?
My story was about Doctor Who. So Matt Smith is the...
I have no interest in Doctor Who at all. I've never watched an episode. I've watched episodes when I was a kid.
Yeah, I've never got into Doctor... I didn't get into Doctor Who when I was a kid, and I haven't got into it since either.
Next story.
So Google Reader shut down.
Tell us all about Doctor Who. So it's the guy from the thick of it, isn't it?
Who cares?
Yes, it is, but I haven't seen the thick of it either. But I watched some highlights, and boy, that's a sweary show.
Fuckity fuck. Cunt.
It's great. Absolutely great.
So Google Reader went away, and I was really worried in advance of it shutting down, and I tried this old Reader.
You cried on the show.
I may have cried.
You did?
I may have.
You can go back and get the recording, I'm sure.
No recordings exist.
Okay.
Due to an imminent server error and a hammer. So I was really worried about it, and I tried this old Reader. And I was like, yeah, it's not great that it took a day for you to import my feeds and I can't search and your interface is slow and basically fuck this. And then I left it for like another 6 weeks. And then I tried out Feedly because everyone was like, Feedly's pretty good. And so I logged into Feedly using my Google credentials and it instantly got all of my feeds and it even picked up my tags and my previously tagged stories and so on. And that was really cool. Hooray! I was like, hooray!
Hooray!
But then just a few days ago, yay! And I was pretty happy with that, and I've been doing the stories for Discourse and Feedly since like a week before Google Reader shut down. And Google Reader shut down, I didn't really give a shit, as it turned out, because I'd already moved on. And it's just like year 2000, right? There was no big deal in the year 2000 because a lot of work was done in advance of it, right? Mm. And so Feedly did a whole lot of work to get rid of their back end, which previously had relied on Google's infrastructure, and they built all their own stuff, got a lot of servers and so on. And simultaneously with that, we've seen in the last week a story from this old Reader. They decided that they were shutting off signups and they were rolling back their membership to like back to March. And everyone who had signed up after March was being removed from the service because they had burned out and they felt like they'd been through hell and it was no longer worth it for them. And they'd all, lost touch with their families and was miserable and burned out. And I was like, are you kidding me? You're too popular. That's your problem. You're too popular and you can't figure out a solution to this. Maybe put some ads on. How about that? And then hire some developers. What a really excellent problem to have. Too many users on the internet. Too many users. God, what will I ever do? And then a day later, someone got in touch with them and said, listen, you guys, you don't need to shut it down. How about we work together? And they're apparently going to do that. But who cares? Because this already now are the past and Feedly are the new shit. But my only problem with them was there was no way to give them any money. And I was talking about it only a couple of days ago on Twitter. And
in Feedly or this old reader?
Feedly. Mm. Feedly. There's no way to give them any money. And then last night they announced pro accounts. And they only had 5,000 of them. And they are $5 a month. Or you could pay $45 a year or $99 for a lifetime account. And I was like, I'm definitely going to be using it for 2 years. Especially if I pay. And so I got this lifetime account, which actually is probably the cheap-ass approach, really. And they sold out of these 5,000 pro accounts that they were going to have within hours. And so now they've got $500,000 with which they've said they're going to get more servers and do a little bit of additional work. And pro accounts get search in their feeds. Hooray! Great! And so now I can search my feeds just like I used to be able to on Reader. And the thing about Feedly is that they've kind of got, what do they call it, Feedly Cloud or something? And they've got, they're really third-party service friendly so that people can tie other tools in with their stuff. Evernote. It works with my Google+. It works with Facebook so I can pump out stories. And it's really cool. Feedly, hooray.
The chat room says that HTTPS is a pro feature.
Yes, and I've got that. Yep.
But that means the rest of us don't.
Sorry, you should pay.
But we can't now.
Well, you will be able to. What they've done with the first group of pro account subs money is buy servers so that they can provide a decent service for additional pro users later. I think that they should keep being freemium. I think that
totally. One of the reasons that pro feature.
Well, the point is that you shouldn't use it for free. It's not a free service to offer. You should pay.
Well, no, if it's
and not, you should be discouraged from freeloading on it. The reason that Google Reader went away.
If you make a service for free, it's free. If you make a service that's not for free, then it's not for free. That's if you're going to make it for free, you can't say it's free, but you shouldn't use it.
Listen, dickhead. Feedly is free. You just don't get this one feature you've decided that you want unless you pay.
Okay, I think that's a strange line to draw in the sand for a pro feature though.
Well, given what's been happening,
especially in this world of we don't trust anyone and all our internet traffic gets snooped and recorded and God only knows what.
That's true. So it's probably a good idea to pay that $5, isn't it?
Don't know. Maybe.
Or find another service which provides the features that you want for the price you want to pay, which apparently is nothing.
Do you know what? The other day I was looking at Twitter and there was a story went by saying Google has reached an agreement to acquire Feedly for,
Yeah, that was from TechCrunch Onion.
I read that and thought, wow, really? And I was not completely surprised to think it was serious.
Yeah.
It was really well done.
Oh, it'd be terrible.
You can imagine them doing it though, eh?
Would have been gloriously amusing though, wouldn't it?
It would have been hilarious.
Anyway, so my point with the pro stuff is that Reader went away because one of the reasons is that it wasn't making Google any money.
Yeah, it's not services, like Google didn't have the chance to make it make money though.
They could have put advertising on it or they could have charged a fee.
Out of that for sure.
Yes, and Feedly have figured out a way to make money out of Feedly by charging a fee, and the reason that people are prepared to pay that is that they get additional services.
Yeah, of course. No, I mean, I'm not dissing the concept, and that's the right approach. But I think it's a little simplistic to say that Google Reader went away because they couldn't make money with it, because they fucking could have, absolutely could have, if they wanted to. They obviously just chose not to be interested in that particular.
Yeah, it conflicted with some other strategy. Yeah, it was too open or something, and they're increasingly closed, obviously. And it wasn't enough, Google Plus involved, I expect, and they really seem to want to promote Google Plus. You know, a lot of users, not many people use it, and I guess maybe Reader was a problem for that. I don't know why, but the Reader is the past now, and Feedly is the present, and hopefully also the near future.
Next story.
One feature that people will probably be prepared to pay $100 for is HTTPS on their toilet. So Ben will be able to will agree with me, I think, that Japanese toilets, greatest in the world.
Best. No comparison.
Absolute best. Now, some Japanese toilets you can control with your phone through Bluetooth, and it turns out that every model of that toilet had the same Bluetooth key, authentication key, and that was 00000. And if you'd logged into the, if you'd paired with the toilet using that key, you could then control it remotely. So, for instance, if your mate was in the bathroom, you could start the sprayer.
That would be so much fun.
Endless fun.
Endless fun, but actually it would have a pretty short end because I expect, you know, either water everywhere
You could do that anyway, couldn't you? And if it was your toilet and you'd already paired with it, of course you could.
Yes, but anyone can pair with any of these toilets because the key was the same on all of them.
Toilet.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, Bluetooth, it's not exactly
randomly turn the sprayer on in the next apartment over without knowing what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I want a Wi-Fi connected toilet. Is that a thing? No, an internet connected toilet where you can turn the flusher on and things. Do you remember that thing in the late 90s where everyone was connecting everything to the internet?
Yes.
Lights and cameras and heaters and TVs and signs.
I've heard that cellular telephones will probably have internet connections eventually, Dylan.
I wouldn't think so.
A friend of mine made a little thing. He made a little thing with parallel ports and soldering irons that turned on fairy lights.
Yep.
And he'd made one, I think, with a house fan as well, which is a bit strange. Not very good on a webcam. Oh, the fan's on because now it's blurry, I guess. It was a very different age. We were amused by simpler things.
Much.
And it was harder work actually to make it all happen. Speaking of being amused by simple things, I don't know about you. I mean, there's a phrase, ends with a bang. Explosions are quite fun. Michael Bay's made a whole career out of it. And there's this poor woman, this Utah beauty queen. She's been arrested for allegedly throwing homemade bombs at houses with three of her friends. What? She's named because she's a beauty queen, Kendra McKenzie Gill. She's Miss Riverton.
Kendra. Yeah, can't trust people called Kendra.
Yep. Along with a couple of her friends, they were driving around and they had, I guess they had like Coke bottles and they were pushing, I don't know what the household cleaner is, but it must be something quite caustic. That and aluminium foil and then twisting closed the top and chucking them out of the car. And of course, there's a vigorous reaction and pressure builds up and they pop. Now, unfortunately, it was described like the police were called because they did this like 12 times or something through the town, throwing several of these things at houses. And they've been charged, I think, with felonies. And the police were saying that they thought, you know, what is the difference between this and terrorism? And we can get to that in a minute. And they described it as, what did they call it? An incendiary device. Which is barely true.
Yeah.
You know, these things, they burst with a loud bang, but they essentially burst like a balloon burst if you blow it up too much. But, of course, they're not made of rubber. They're made of, you know, whatever the hell the bottles are made of.
PET plastic, usually.
PET. And so it takes a bit more pressure to do it, and so it sounds quite a bit louder.
Yeah, it's a big loud thump or pop, yeah.
And there is, a caustic household cleaner inside, which will then go somewhere. Maybe it could be like
drain cleaning.
It's something like that. I don't know if it's specifically Drano, but it's probably
It is specifically Drano.
Well, it's one of those things.
The chemical of Drano is, I think it's it's basically lye or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the suggestion that let alone that this is a felony charge at all, when obviously it's a prank. These aren't incendiary.
Well, you know. To be fair, the liquid that emerges from the bottle, because the liquid that builds up in the bottle before
hydrogen.
The bottle explodes,
yeah,
is essentially boiling. It explodes with enough force that it could sever fingers and deliver second and third degree chemical burns to anyone unlucky enough to be hit by the chemicals.
That seems unlikely, though, doesn't it?
Really unlikely.
And pranks can be dangerous. Now, I don't think it'd be okay to chuck one of these in someone's house. But having them out on the street, you know, they'd be annoying. But should someone be charged with being a terrorist because of this kind of prank?
Now, so here's the thing, though. I've just Googled about these Drano bombs.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm now going to get a visit from a joint terrorist task force.
Have you also Googled about pressure cookers and backpacks?
No.
I think you should, just quickly. Here, let me send you a couple of links, unrelated.
Yeah. 45 minutes. That was the great internet hysteria of the week, I think.
Mm-hmm. You think Tell me about this story.
Actually, let's talk about two media internet hysterias that are very tangentially related.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One is that one, which was a woman somewhere, I can't be bothered remembering where, New York maybe, upstate New York, claimed that she was visited by a joint terrorism task force, which was initially assumed to be something to do with the FBI, to ask questions about whether or not they'd been researching pressure cooker bombs, or her husband was actually visited. She wasn't at home when the task force turned up. She assumed and wrote in her post that the reason they'd visited was because she had been Googling, about 6 weeks earlier, she had been Googling information on pressure cookers, and at roughly the same time, her husband had been looking into backpacks.
How would you remember something like that?
I don't know. I guess you start running through things in your mind, or who knows. But, so she figured these things out, wrote an article about it, basically said that, look, someone has looked at my Google history and put it together and considered me a possible terrorist because of this. And the internet went crazy because, you know, the NSA is now looking at our search histories in real time and deciding that we're terrorists because of it and visiting us with, you know, SWAT. Oh, that was the other thing. The Atlantic Wire, which ran the initial article, illustrated it with a picture of a SWAT team clearing a house during the Boston bombings, which was just insane. Because while six police officers did turn up at her house and two apparently blacked out SUVs, they were in plain clothes, they had holstered pistols, and were very polite, according to her own recounting of the event, which she wasn't present for.
Six men with guns turn up at your house and they're polite? I'm not sure that these two things actually necessarily go together. So, yeah, but not all cops in the States turn up in teams of six.
Yeah, well, maybe that was... Who knows what that's about? But anyway, that wasn't the issue. So it turns out that what actually happened, apparently, according to the police force involved, was that her husband had recently been released from his job for some reason. That's not specified. Let's assume he was maybe fired. And had been doing something on his computer at work, Googling things or whatever related to pressure cooker bombs, such that his employers thought it suspicious and reported it to the police. The police then followed up on a tip, essentially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean,
people talked to the people, decided there was nothing about it left, and nothing else happened.
Yeah. So it was kind of it's a perfect storm of timing. You know, it's exactly around, you know, just after the Prism leaks and that sort of stuff. So it got a huge bunch of viral coverage, because everyone said, you see it now, watching everything we're doing, which I think was naive. You know,
so here was the thing. When I first saw the story, before the police department's response to it had come out, I immediately thought, this is bullshit.
It smells wrong. Yeah.
Because if Googling backpacks and pressure cookers was enough to get you a visit from a terrorism task force, then thousands of people would be getting visits from terrorism task force.
Absolutely.
And this wouldn't be the first time we'd heard of it.
I think probably everyone did in the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombing.
Almost certainly.
I know I did. I didn't Google backpacks.
Still
though.
Going on. I mean, to assume that there was, you know, that as a result of the Boston bombing, that those two keywords and somehow were enough to get you visited by police is insane.
It does seem unlikely, but and I find your glee about this story actually a little bit distasteful, Dylan.
No, my glee is about it's not glee. My thing about it was there's just so much of this jumping to conclusions and not critical thinking when it comes to stuff like this. And as much as the corrections come out afterwards, they never reach as far as the initial panic.
I suppose the thing is, when everyone is being treated as a criminal, and I think that's essentially what it sounded like we have been, and it's the same in New Zealand, it's the same in England. People doing perfectly innocent things are being watched as if they're dangerous international criminals.
Yeah.
And when that information comes out, I think people are probably right to be, I mean, obviously people were on edge. This story is not a good example of people behaving reasonably. But I don't know that it's people jumping to the wrong conclusion that are the cause of this problem. I think it's governments treating their citizens as bad guys. I think it's governments being afraid of their populations. That's the actual problem.
I disagree. I agree that police or security organizations treating everyone as potential criminals and, you know, essentially going on fishing trips with intelligence, looking for anything they can to find evidence of something, is absolutely and unequivocally wrong. But when things like this get used and held up and waved around as an example of that, and then of course they turn out not to be, because a little bit of critical thinking would have gone, hang on, this doesn't really work, you know, this doesn't really work out, then all it does is it serves to discredit the initial fear. Because what happens is it goes, see, you said this was this thing, and it's not.
It's a crying wolf thing. But someone did look at their search history. It's just that it wasn't the government doing it.
No, and that's a whole different issue, but it's nothing to do, you know, that's not a governmental issue. You can't blame the police for their actions at that point, which were following up on a tip. You would expect no less.
Well, if you build an environment of panic and fear, this is the kind of thing that happens. You know, in the 1980s, someone Googling about, you know, fucking Drano bombs. No one, you know, obviously, I know Google didn't exist. Well, no, shut up, internet literalists.
No, but at the same time that there was, though, I mean, you know, there's always been things that would cause people suspicion that weren't actually suspicious. You
but
know,
there's reasonable suspicion and then there's false suspicion.
Well, we don't know, but, you know, in this circumstance, we don't know what the suspicion was. It was enough to make someone suspicious. Why was the guy fired? Why was the guy no longer employed? Was he fired? What had he been doing on his computer? You know, who knows? We didn't see any of that stuff.
None of that is any of our fucking business.
No, but people who knew him well, people who'd worked with this guy, were concerned enough by what they saw to consider it a matter that they should report to the police. We don't know what it was, and to say that it's, you know, it's jumping at shadows is, you know, it's baseless. We don't know what it was.
Okay, but you just made an assumption there as well, didn't you? What if he quit and they felt like bridges were burned and so it was petulance on their part?
Yeah, there's two things here that smell wrong to me.
Seems unlikely. I mean,
does it? It's exactly as likely.
It seems very likely.
Of course, but there's no way of knowing.
He hasn't.
You're the one that was making conjecture on that.
But the police,
no outrage from him.
And the police have done exactly what you'd hope the police would do. They've investigated it, figured there was nothing there, and moved on.
Yeah, the only person who hasn't moved on, Dylan, is you, actually, frankly. And I think that's just your glee shining through.
No, I found
it. Weren't you clever, Dylan? Weren't you clever? Everyone else thought that story was the whole issue.
I don't know what you're saying now.
Well, people are not upset about that. People are upset about a much bigger picture than that one woman's living room.
Of course they should be. But the problem is that one thing which we leap at then gets turned around and that discredits the initial thing. It's like, in some respects, it's like things that Snowden does that discredit more of what he's revealed, or, you know, like the exaggerations that they've published that have turned out not to be true then discredit other things that turn out to be true. It's like when you're arguing about things like this, or when you're trying to make a point about things like this, it's worth taking the time to make sure that the things you're trying to make a point about are accurate, because otherwise they immediately get spun around and used to discredit the real claim.
Well, I actually never saw the hysteria at all.
Really?
Yeah, the first time I encountered this was when you were shouting at people on Twitter to not be so credulous. That was the first time I encountered this story at all. I don't think it was as big as you think it was.
All right.
The story was absolutely huge.
Yeah, there were like 10 stories on the front page of Reddit, and it was all over Twitter and Facebook.
It went everywhere, yeah, because that's what I said. What I was saying is the confluence between this story and the PRISM stuff really hit a note. And
yeah, it became the vindication of the fears, which is...
When governments behave suspiciously, they will be treated with suspicion. That's the thing.
Yeah, but you have to... I mean, the point really is that you have to be careful about making the claims that you make. That's all. And then the internet jumps at everything.
Well, that's the internet's job.
But so the other one that was tangentially related to that was after all this stuff about surveillance of journalists and things that have been going on in New Zealand, Stuff ran a story about New Zealand, was he a contractor, civilian contractor?
Oh, in Afghanistan. Oh, Christ.
Working in Afghanistan.
No, this is no story either.
I know it's not, but they jumped all over it because I guess it was the big thing. We were all talking about how, you know, the privacy of journalists was invaded and he got called by the Defense Department after a tweet.
A public spying tweet. On
him. Yeah, that was weird. It's like it's that same thing. It's like kind of got this, they've got this whole hype for one type of story and then they jump on something that isn't.
That one was really weird because they didn't even know who he was. They had to call someone that they thought knew him and had his phone number to get his number to contact him directly. It's not like they had Big Brother powers.
No, I just...
That one was bizarre.
Some Google alerts set up or something.
Yeah, that one was bizarre. I mean, it's... And actually, frankly, I think it was probably reasonable as well. I mean, he was revealing the location of soldiers who were apparently in active contact with the enemy, which is dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So that story, instantly, obviously stupid, and there's just nothing to it. Other things that are fishy, Dylan and Ben.
Okay, I'm listening.
So the New Zealand fisheries stocks of snapper have been collapsing a bit. Yeah, and I
would have been disappointed if you weren't.
I held my tongue a long time ago because you said that there was a fishing expedition. And I was like, oh, fishing expedition. I could jump in now, but I wanted to call you gleeful again.
Okay.
So the Department of Conservation, no, is that who it is? Is it MAF? I don't even know what these frigging departments are called anymore. They keep changing their fucking names. Anyway, whoever is responsible for setting quotas.
Something?
What?
No, that's Ministry of Primary Industries. I don't think
recreational
fishing is a primary industry.
Anyway, so there's a quota for commercial fishing, and there is, I think there's not really a quota for recreational fishers, but there's sort of an allowance. Rather than a quota, and there's a daily allowance and no kind of annual allowance, and that is like nine snapper, and they have to be over 27 centimeters, which is much too small. Anyone who takes a 27 centimeter snapper, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Oh yeah, you're not going to get much eating off that.
But so there's a proposal, because the snapper fisheries have been collapsing a bit. There's a proposal that the recreational allowance is going to be dropped to 3 per day, and the snapper size limit is going to be increased to 35 centimetres, which is pretty big.
They're the largest. There's some options they've proposed, but I think that's the largest one, isn't it? But they're all three fish.
They're all three fish, and none of them are. Let's get commercial fishers in hand and stop them from doing these really dodgy fish dumps that we see the evidence of every now and again. Just earlier this year, there was a dump that was calculated at several thousand snapper. It was tons up the Coromandel coast, up from Thames. Just thousands of dead snapper just, you know, washing ashore, which had been dumped by a commercial fishing boat. There is just no way that those were recreational fishers dumping them. It's insane that recreational fishers, who I think are not a big part of the problem, are the ones who are being expected to make the biggest changes. I think that 27 centimetres is too small. I think it should be increased. I think 9 probably is more than you need. I think that 35 is probably too big, though. And I think 3 is not enough. So there's got to be some balance. And I think part of the balance is reducing the commercial quotas.
Yeah, it just seems unfair to me that the recreational fishers who obviously aren't depleting fish stocks are the ones that have to pay for the depletion of fish stocks.
Yeah, and they're the ones who can target specific sizes. They're the ones who actually are already more careful. We throw them back if they're under 30. And if we've already got a couple that are, you know, a decent size, we increase our size limit, you know, 31, 32, 33. And we just throw back kind of increasingly larger fish. And we don't kill the ones that we don't want to keep. But the commercial fishers kill everything. And they have large bycatch as well, which is, you know, all of the other unwanted fish that they get in their nets.
It's a complete mockery, the whole, you know, quota by, you know, size limits, that sort of stuff, because they just sweep up everything and, like you say, just dump what they don't want.
Yeah.
5.
So cut back the commercial quotas for a little while.
4.
Crazies.
Yeah. We're going to have lots of noise for a
second. Whole hour of ranting.
Night.
2.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
1. You're listening to The Weekly Show on Whisk.
Sorry. Oh, my God. Sorry, we're using that one.
But what will it mean for the price of fish?
Sorry, Morgan, did I sound too gleeful there at the end?
Not at all.
Oh.
No.
That's good.
Only when you were relating the story that everyone else has already moved on from.
You know, most people have moved on from all the stories we talk about each week.
Yes.
They're old.
I know. Oh, well, there's one, though. This snake that got out of a pet shop in Canada.
Horrible.
And somehow, allegedly, went up a ventilation system into an apartment that was over this pet shop and killed 2 children.
That's not cool.
That's not cool. You're not meant to get killed by snakes in Canada. Or really anywhere, ideally. But, you know, you'd expect it to happen every now and then in Australia. You know,
It's actually pretty unpleasant.
Yeah, it's really unpleasant.
Yeah.
And apparently they were choked. So it was some sort of constrictor or something. Shocking.
More importantly, LED RGB light strips.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
Why?
What?
We're redoing our kitchen and I want to put some electronics in it.
So this is under your cabinets?
I have some experience in this.
Either under the cabinets or maybe under the under the edge of the bench.
White
cabinets.
In a previous job, mm-hmm. I worked for a television production company.
Mm-hmm.
That made some show that included, anyway, for reasons, a kitchen. There was a kitchen in which we could produce television. And that kitchen had RGB LED light strips in both above the bench and underneath the bench recesses.
Mm.
And while they looked pretty on camera, they did sweet fuck all in terms of actually adding usable light.
Yeah.
Right. No, they wouldn't add. No, it's not for usable light. No, it's purely for, changing the mood of the kitchen if you want to.
Okay.
You want that in the bedroom then, not the kitchen.
Ben, if you're going to do this, there's a couple of requirements.
Mm.
They must be like full RGB, not just like the one with the remote control that lets you pick one of 6 colors.
Yeah.
So you must be able to program them. You need to plug them into an Arduino controller, mm-hmm. right, with Bluetooth.
Bluetooth.
And then you need to be able to pair them to your phones so that they can provide notifications of events on your phone or your wife's phone, so that the kitchen lighting, and perhaps install them in other places in the house as well, so that the kitchen lighting can inform you of notifications. It will, you know, flash blue when you've got a new tweet or flash green when you've got more lives than Candy Crush. I don't know what the hell you do on your phone.
I'm sure we can do that.
So do that. That's your. Yeah. That's the only reason I think you should be allowed to put RGB light LED light strips in your kitchen.
Ambient notification stuff is very cool.
Yeah, if you just put LED light strips in your kitchen to make it look pretty and do nothing interesting with it, then you're just a tool. You're like one of the people who drive around with the neon lights under their cars.
You're like the
because obviously you're not like a petrol head bogan. So it's like the West Auckland professional parent, you know, grown up version of that.
RGB LEDs in the bedroom lead to sexy time.
Is that true?
That is
proven
fact.
Fact.
Fact. Right. And you can't argue with that. You also can't argue with John Key, apparently.
I wouldn't.
Japan launches talking humanoid robot into space.
Oh, jeez, really?
Why? What did it do?
I think it was probably just really creepy, and it was the only way they could think of to get it far enough away that they weren't skeeved out by the thing.
If only they could have melted it in a giant pot of steel.
They could do that, and it could put up one thumb. Train leaves with boys but not mum. A pregnant Auckland mother watched in horror as a train's doors closed, cutting her off from her 3 young sons and leaving her stranded on the platform as it left a South Auckland station.
I watched an episode of Curious George recently that was just like that.
Here's the thing.
George got on the train, but the man in yellow didn't.
How?
And then they kept missing each other while they tried to get... Because George can't really speak English or read, but he can figure out how subways work.
Yeah.
Sort of, but he doesn't understand the two trains are going in different directions.
I don't understand what kind of muppetry this woman was engaging in that she didn't manage to get in through the door. Just be a little bit more organized. You know that it's only open briefly.
But even then, it's not like it's automatic. Like, there's a dude sticks his head out, makes sure that everyone's clear of the train, and then pushes a button that goes ding, ding, and then you've got, like, after that, like, 3 seconds before the doors close. Like, at that point, if she made a... I'm sure if she made a concerted lunge towards the doors, then he'd probably see her and stop.
I've been told to read the end of the story, something about CCTV.
She pushed her last kid in the... gap through the gap in the door.
Veolia spokeswoman Michelle Roach said CCTV footage showed two of the children running down the platform to get on the train as its bells were ringing, signaling the doors were closing. Ms. Johnson was then seen pushing her third child through a tiny gap in the doors, she said.
Well, how did you think that was going to work out? Although I'm still surprised, because having caught a train recently, I saw, you know, and my recollection from catching trains more in the past as well was that the, I don't know, guard, is that what they're called?
Conductor?
Stays looking out the door until the train starts moving. So the guard would presumably see that, and the train wouldn't actually leave. They would stop the train.
Yeah. Anyway, I was right. It was Muppetry.
Yes, Muppetry.
Muppetry. But the reason for the Muppetry is that we don't have frequent enough service on the train network. You'd never get this in Tokyo because you don't need to. There's going to be another train in 2 minutes. Why would you?
I wonder how close we could get them. We can get them. What's the target, do you know?
Well, I think that the Auckland, the transport blog, Zero, what did they call it? Zero what network? Zero something network.
Zero
congestion network. I think their target was 10 minutes on every service. So 10 minutes for trains and 10 minutes for buses and 10 minutes for trams and so on.
Right. Well, I think it was something like that. The trains, at least on the Western Line, are only about 16 minutes apart, which isn't... Seems pretty reasonable, although they get very full on the peak services.
Yeah.
But they're also very big, very long trains, lots of carriages.
Yeah. Killed homeless man was an optimist.
That's good, nice to know.
He was optimistic about his mental health improving, just, you know, on its own account probably. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I don't know that he was mentally ill. He was optimistic about his alcoholism just going away, maybe.
Wow.
I also don't know if that is the case. And, of course, none of that has anything to do with him being murdered. It's terrible that some prick decided that some 17-year-old little coward murdered him. Describing a homeless person as an optimist, it just strikes me as really odd. I mean, he's... Yeah, go on.
It is strange.
It's a strange word. One, right? German newspapers, they lobbied the German government for laws that allowed them to opt out of Google search results. And so then they were removed from the search results.
And now they get no internets.
And now they've opted back in. Because suddenly they were getting no friggin' readers. And they reckon that it's only temporary, and they're going to figure out how to charge aggregators for using, you know, excerpts of their stories. But, you know, best of luck to them, because no one else has figured that out, really, have they?
No, and it's, yeah.
It's advertising dicks.
They just won't pay you. It's that simple. So, talking about newspapers,
yeah.
It's Jeff Bezos, isn't it? The Amazon founder?
Yes.
Bezos?
Yep.
Bezos.
Billionaire Bezos.
He bought the Washington Post, and that's all I know about that story.
And he actually bought also a printing company and a bunch of small regional newspapers along with it. So what he's bought is not one newspaper. It was described as basically buying an instant newspaper empire, not just one newspaper.
Well, that can't be a very big empire, though. But I mean, the Washington Post is pretty. It's you know, one of the larger papers in the U.S.
$250 million.
That doesn't seem like very much.
You compare that to something like Instagram. I bet Washington Post has...
$1 billion?
Yeah, it was a billion, right? Instagram?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's got the money, and he's also got, you know, like a distribution with the Kindles, with all the wireless stuff and so on.
And he understands the internet.
And he certainly understands the internet. It seems like all sorts of billionaires all over the place own their own newspapers, so why not him?
A bunch of people were making jokes about... Well, we're making jokes about him changing the way the Washington Post runs, or were fearful of that.
Yeah.
Although I don't. It doesn't seem like a big fear. He wrote a letter immediately to the staff of the Washington Post organization that tried to allay their fears in that respect. And the Washington Post has always been privately owned.
Yeah.
It's been owned by a family, privately, you know, family owned. So, who knows?
Right.
Yeah. It seems like a silly fear, surely. Why would you suddenly have the front page be Amazon is awesome every day?
That would be fucking awesome, though, if someone said it'd be awesome if the next day's Washington Post all the articles just said that Jeff Bezos was awesome.
That would be pretty funny.
Anonymous web host shut down, owner arrested, Tor users compromised by JavaScript exploit.
I've heard very, very mixed reports on precisely how compromised-y and things that was.
Well, the first story I saw about it said that half of the, what are they called, hidden nodes, hidden services, half of the hidden services on Tor had disappeared as a result of this, which is a lot.
But for 2 or 3 days before they disappeared, they were apparently serving up this...
JavaScript.
Malware-y JavaScript thing.
Yeah.
But then also a review of that JavaScript says that it very specifically only targeted Firefox 17.
Yeah.
One specific browser.
Is that because there's a version of Firefox that is kind of the most popular on Tor because it is configured out of the box to use Tor. Is that the version that was targeted?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, I don't understand, because I only read the first few articles, I haven't read any of the follow-up ones, is allegedly it installed some sort of cookie that would then be used.
Oh, some sort of third-party trackable cookie.
Yeah, that would then be, but I'm not sure how would you set a cookie from Tor that would then be trackable outside of Tor.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I don't use Tor, so I don't really care. Apparently most of the targeted websites were involved in child porn stuff, although obviously after that they will presumably start to target things like the Silk Road.
Yeah.
Tor was a very, I mean, they call it the dark web for a reason. There was some fucking horrific shit on there.
Yeah. So there may be some, you know, political dissidents who in the West would just be considered opposition, and then their own country, you know, they're at threat of, you know, being murdered by the powers that be. But I'd say that kind of user of Tor would be a very small minority, and the majority of people would be, well, kind of interested nerds and crypto nerds. And then perhaps the largest would be the people who are doing something extremely skeevy and they don't want to get caught. And those people are the increasingly underground child porn trader people.
Those two groups of people use Tor differently. The political dissident types use Tor.
Wouldn't have a hidden service.
Well, exactly.
It would just be for anonymizing.
To anonymize their use of public internet services.
Yeah.
Rather than existing in the private onion Tor internet thing.
Yeah. So if you're listening to Discourse, you know what Tor is. Just in case you don't, it's Tor is the onion router. And essentially your browser connects to an entry node and then goes through several other nodes within Tor and then exits on an exit node. And the idea is that no one who you then connect to via this, you know, perhaps labyrinthine path to a normal website, they will immediately see the IP address of the contacting party, and it will just be this exit node. It won't be you. And the idea of the anonymizing.
And beyond that, it also, like, no node within the chain knows where its data is coming from. It only knows the immediate node preceding it, and even the entry node doesn't realize that it's getting data from your client directly. As far as it can tell, it's getting data from another Tor node.
Yeah.
Etc. So it's pretty effective as an anonymous internet connection tool, but it completely falls apart, of course, if you use it to do anonymous stuff, but also use it to do non-anonymous stuff, because there are all sorts of cookies and tracking information that can cross over between the two of them. Apparently people who use Tor effectively do things like have virtual machines that they use and then reset each time.
Mm.
Et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I've never really bothered.
So the thing that I like most on Tor, is the Silk Road that you already mentioned, which is probably one of the main kind of places that people actually spend bitcoins, and it's probably where bitcoins got big. The Silk Road sells dodgy stuff, mainly drugs, and some seriously, you know, real drugs, not just silly drugs, and also silly drugs because they're fun, but they're all illegal in somewhere, and they don't really discriminate, and they just sort of, you know, ship it through the postal system or whichever service they have to use to not be a federal offense. I think the United States Postal Service, USPS, that's the one they don't use because it's a felony to send anything illegal, I think, through USPS. So they use like normal couriers, FedEx and so on, because the laws are different. Anyway, that's, you know, obviously that's beside the point. Silk Road is a hidden service on Tor. So you can't really see where it is, where it's hosted.
No, and you have to be connected to Tor to be able to access it.
Yeah. So you know, this stuff is really interesting, and we might find in our NSA future that we you know, perhaps more of us are going to have to adopt some of these technologies just for our ordinary, you know, not disgusting dodginess. You know,
well, there are things as well. There's a new open source alternative to Skype that's gaining some traction, yeah, after a bit of the kickback about NSA Skypey stuff.
Yeah,
things like that.
They're welcome to listen to our discourse conversations, but
if they listen to our discourse conversations, it'd be good if they just download it normally so we can, you know, see.
Yeah. I'd appreciate that. Actually, I wonder if we've ever had any listeners within government IP addresses. I'm not sure if Analytics or FeedBurner would even tell me. I hate FeedBurner. Analytics might tell me. Anyway, so this guy who is an Irish chap, and he runs an ISP that hosted the servers that were Tor hidden servers. The company was called Freedom Web, and his name, Eric Ian Marquez, he was arrested over allegations that he had facilitated the spread of child pornography. Now, whether this is difficult because, you know, he might be one of those weird crypto punks who just believes in this as sort of a higher calling, but he also might be a really dodgy guy who knew exactly what he was doing and was doing it for that, explicitly for that purpose. Anyway,
I'm rather hoping it was that he's a dirty porno dude, and that's,
yeah, because he's going down regardless, right? Yeah, I mean, he's basically been busted, and his name is being dragged through the mud. And if he is a child pornographer or a supporter of the child pornographers, then I guess it's probably appropriate. But if he's just one of these weird privacy cryptography guys, then it wouldn't be so good.
Yeah,
there's no escape. Anyway. I think I'm probably done with all my shrapnel stories. Oh, we could also talk about Ian Tomlinson, who was killed by a police officer in 2009. They claimed that they didn't know what had happened until people who were videoing the event. It was in during a G20 protests in London. People were videoing, of course, what everyone was doing, and it clearly showed this chap, Tomlinson, walking along with his hands in his pockets, being attacked from behind by a police officer with no notice or warning, and he died shortly thereafter. And it's taken them until now to apologise. And the chap who did it was found not guilty by a jury. So, you know, he got away with it, you know, fair enough. But it took until now to apologise. That's shocking. You don't get to murder. Well, murder's not the right word. You don't get to cause people's deaths and then not even say sorry for 4 years. Anyway, that's it. Yeah, so, I mean, police, if they do this to themselves. Of course, if they'd all had cameras on their chests, all of them, then it would have been a bit harder for them to sweep it under the carpet, especially if that stuff was all OIA'd and logged in some way, that it's hard for it to be, you know, sneakily deleted. But they'll just put their hands, you know, they'll put their hands over the lens or whatever, and then eventually we'll all have friggin' cameras, and then this stuff will perhaps go away.
See, that's the angle about the cameras on cops thing I'm not completely comfortable with, is, yeah, that obviously we like the ability to go about our jobs without being filmed constantly. But then again, there are lots of people who go about their jobs and have to accept being filmed. So who the hell knows? I don't know. I think overall it's probably a good thing.
It's not part of my job to deprive people of their freedom. And it's also not part of my job that people, well, actually people do take my word over others, but not in the court of law necessarily and not by default. You know, I don't get to have handcuffs or tasers or under extreme circumstances, firearms. I don't get to have any of that stuff as part of my job. Those guys do. They need to be held to a higher standard because they do get privileges that the rest of us don't necessarily get. And also, I mean, one of the reasons that they say that people shouldn't video them, and that's an argument we seem to get less frequently, is that, you know, stuff can be taken out of context. You know, so when they beat the shit out of someone, you don't see that that person had previously been beating the shit out of one of them.
That's actually,
you know, so the only bit that
gets angles that's been used to kind of sell the idea to officers.
Exactly. If there is a video from both sides, you get the context.
Your side of the story is supported as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so just let people, everyone should be able to video in public. We are all videoed in public, so we should all be able to video in public. Anyway, that's it.
Yep. It's done.
Solves that's the prisoner's dilemma as well.
Does it solve the prisoner's dilemma?
Yeah, shining a light on everything is the only way to solve it. There was a really good article about doping in sport and the fact that it should be solved by monitoring, but the fact that the monitoring isn't public means it isn't solved.
Right. Yeah, public is important.
No one trusts the monitors.
So, I mean, I feel like we should be able to see the CCTV.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, why not? Why not? No. I mean, so if one reason why not is that then you can see where all the dark spots are, and that's where you lay in wait to do your muggings. But that seems like a pretty fringe
also,
argument, doesn't it?
There are things that even though they are taking place in public place that you don't want to people to be able to see necessarily if they're not, you know, actually there.
Things that take a place in public but aren't public acts?
No, they're public, but, you know, you don't necessarily, like, the difference between being occurring in public and being constantly broadcast 24/7 is a bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, there are people have a lot of unpleasant moments. I don't know.
Yeah, and of course, you know, once people have access to something, they have access to save it as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a problem.
Like there are people suggesting that cop cameras should be streamed to the internet, which is an absolutely terrible idea.
Well, they have to go into very sensitive situations. They have to speak to rape victims and people who have been victims of assaults and old people who have just been burgled and people who are crying and upset and you know, scenes of deaths and all sorts of stuff. I don't think that those the people who are the subjects of, you know, the lensing, their dignity would be diminished, I think, by having them.
And those sorts of things also occur in public places and in view of CCTV cameras for the same. Yeah. And that's the same reason I wouldn't want them necessarily immediately publicly available without oversight.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like the idea that they exist and that they remain recorded and that those records are kept properly.
Oversight is the thing, isn't it? And that's the problem that people have with the GCSB changes, oversight.
Yeah.
All right. I think that we have come to at least a conclusion that we can agree on.
Cool.
Fish and chats. Sorry.
The show is cancelled. Beep.